Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Hello everyone, it's Jesse Green here. Welcome back to SavvyDentist.com and to the Savvy Dentist Podcast, episode 500. Can you believe it? We actually made it. You know, bringing you this podcast is such a pleasure. It's such a privilege, and it's a real thrill to speak to people every single week and extract their insights, their lessons, and make them relevant to you as a dental practice owner so you can create a practice and a life you love. And in recognition of our 500th episode, we have a guest for you today who's going to absolutely knock your socks off. He's going to blow your mind. Our guest today is one of the foremost strategic business thinkers on the planet, and his clients include the who's who around the world. People literally travel from all corners of the globe to work with him, to sit at his feet, to listen to him speak, to apply his strategies, his tactics. And those clients that do work with him, and he's worked with many of them, they generate tens of billions of dollars of revenue. And for those that are involved in marketing, know anything about marketing, our guest today is one of the originals, one of the OGs of direct response marketing. In fact, if you look at the world famous marketers of today, many of them also trace their roots back to our guest. And if you're part of the Tony Robbins world and you've ever attended Business Mastery, well, our guest today is one of the business mentors on Tony Robbins' panel there. And of course, I'm referring to Jay Abraham. Jay is someone whose work I've followed now for, 20 odd years. And in front of me, I have a book called Getting Everything You Can Out of All You've Got. And it is kind of like the Bible of business for me. I've read that book cover to cover several times. I dip into it at least once a month because there's something I'm thinking about and I always want to get Jay's perspective. And in today's episode, Jay is incredibly generous. He lays out a step-by-step plan to help you become the preeminent dentist in your area. He unpacks the strategy to avoid a competitive landscape, to give you a category of one. He starts talking about how to think strategically, how to elevate yourself above the pack, how to create a dental empire, and a whole lot more. So in this podcast, please, as I always say, have a pen and paper handy, but really listen closely because there's pearls of wisdom and nuggets of gold that you just won't hear anywhere else. And I really commend this podcast to you. And I also want to take a moment to say thank you to you, the audience, for tuning in over the last 500 episodes. We're looking forward to the next 500, and we can't wait to bring you more of the best of business so that you can create the practice and a life that you really love. But without any further ado, here's Jay Abraham. Jay, welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast, episode number 500. Thank you so much for being our guest of honor. Appreciate you.
You're very welcome, and thanks for honoring me by being sort of the poster boy for your 500th episode. That is a remarkable achievement and something you should be enormously proud of. I have one that we were doing incessantly, and I got to about 350, and I lost my steam. But to go 500 quality episodes is a great accomplishment. So doubly congratulations.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that. Jay, you're the kind of OG of marketers, business thinkers. You know, when you examine all roads to success, they all somehow track back your way one way or another. Your clients have generated billions and billions of dollars in revenue and business. You've contributed to so much of that over the years, over the decades. And I wanted to talk about what has really allowed you to make such a contribution to those businesses. And what is it about your thinking? What is it about your strategic approach? And I guess for our audience who are dentists and dental practice owners, you know, how does that translate into the dental world?
Okay, yeah, let me try to answer it in an integrative way, Jesse. It's a great question. So the first part of my career motivation, fuel, purpose, the true skill that I have came accidentally. I got married the first time, age 18, I had two kids at 20, no education, the needs of somebody 40, the world didn't matter. And the only jobs I could get were not salary jobs. They were performance-based where I would only get, we call it eat what you kill. You had to really make something happen that monetized or you didn't make any money. But when you do those, they could care if you worked 1 minute or whether you worked 18 hours, and it was all result-based. And I became very good at figuring out how to make things happen. But I also did multiple things concurrently because I needed to make sure that I could pay the rent and the bills. But fortunately, I did them almost continually in totally different industries. And this was a foundation of my body of work and the first answer to your question. After about 10 totally unrelated industries, I realized that people in one industry don't have a clue, Jesse, how other industries work, think, strategize, business model, distribute, sell, market, anything. And I was able to take very, very common approaches from many of the industries I'd been in, combine them into hybrids, apply them to industries I was in now where nobody understood this, and they blew up. And that was the formation of one part of my answer. And that was that I got to see how much more was possible from time, effort, access to the market, opportunity, capital, human capital, relational capital. And I saw so many entrepreneurs who were passionate, purpose-driven, except a fraction of a fraction of a fraction of the outcome and income and output and contribution they could make. And I was on a mission. That started me. I was much more motivated for that for them, frankly, than making a lot of money. But I realized after a little while that you are rewarded in life in direct proportion, Jesse, to the quantity, quality, and consistency of problems you solve and opportunities you make possible for others. So that was one genesis. The next, so I call it funnel vision versus tunnel vision, because what I realized very quickly was if you do what everybody else does the same way everyone else does it, even if you're better, all you can ever expect is incremental improvement. But if you do things nobody else does in ways nobody else understands, and they are higher, better, more powerful, profitable, predictable, and sustainable alternatives, you can basically create asymmetric and outsized, explosive, and truly exponential growth. So that was another driver. I was introduced to people early in my career who were the very pinnacle of their industry or their niche. And I became obsessed with the concept of preeminence, being seen as the only viable solution anybody could turn to, the go-to source, the most trusted advisor to somebody from life, for life. And that all sort of congealed together to create whatever kind of machine I became. And then I had a hopeless curiosity. I wanted to learn everything I could about everything I could and then distill it. And when you do that over a lifetime, I think I've been doing it for, frankly, the better part of almost 50 years, and I've done it to the tune of about 175,000 hours, and I've done it in 1,000 industries. It just keeps compounding your understanding of an enormous spectrum of things. I don't know if that answer is too abstract.
No, not at all. It actually gives me lots of threads of conversation that I'd like to explore.
Sure, go ahead.
It's a wonderful segue. So there's a few things you touched on there, and I think I'd like to just start with preeminence, because it is something that you're really well known for in this wonderful book, which I mentioned I had here earlier, which is called Getting Everything You Can Out of All You've Got. Yeah, preeminence is a topic that comes up in a considerable way in that particular book. And I think it's a really useful strategy for every business owner to think about employing. But for those people that really haven't thought about that, could you just explore that a little bit, Jay? I know this is something that you've dedicated your life to, really, in some respects.
So the first thing is that you want to be seen as the most trusted advisor. In order to do that, you have to make a conscious decision to be an advisor, not someone who just dispenses information that's non-opinionated. You have to be willing to have an opinion. You have to be able to tell somebody what you believe is in their best interest and why, and what you think they need to do about it, and the outcome you think it'll produce, and the dangers of not doing it. And you've got to really believe that. But you also have to not tell them to do things more than they should or less than they should. So you don't want to let them buy anything they shouldn't in any quantity, quality, or combination than they shouldn't. But you also want to move mountains if you believe they should. You got to be very passionate as their advocate and their champion, not just be an information disseminator. You've got to basically have a very strong worldview for them that you share continually. You are an advisor. You are not, as I said, an information disseminator that they have to choose on their own, because that's not the role of preeminence. Preeminence is all about filling voids, adding value, creating experiential, overcoming friction factors that nobody else even sees or understands. It is the ability to see what it is like to be in your client's, your prospect, client, patient's life and understand what it's like to be them. It's understanding that their interpretation of life isn't yours. And you've got to show them that you feel and understand and appreciate what it's like to be them. You got to know what you stand for, why you stand for it, who you stand for, and what standing for it means. You've got to be on a mission and a crusade, and everyone in your organization needs to be also. It's got to be unified. You've got to be able to live in what Tony Robbins would call future-paced world. You've got to not think of somebody coming in your case, a dentist, coming in to have a cavity filled or a tooth pulled and either a denture or an implant put in. You've got to be able to think about the transformative difference that that's going to make the rest of their life, not just the transactional thing that's going on in your office. You got to think, okay, now they're going to be able to eat steak or corn on the cob, or they'll be able to smile, and that's going to give them self-esteem, and that might make them much more social, and that's going to make them a more gregarious, outgoing, and happy grandparent or whatever. And you got to be live for knowing you've made that transformation possible. And everybody in your organization has to see that in some way they actually contributed to it too. You've got to be able to put into words, in ways and in phrases and in mental imagery, what people want more of or less of, but have never been able to articulate. You've got to do something very, very different than most people in your profession. Most people in your profession fall in love with dentistry.
Yeah.
Or they fall in love with specialties, implants or orthodontics. But the people that are preeminent fall in love with the clients they serve, and they live to make contribution. They live to make a difference, a continual difference. Every time you interact with somebody, you have to make them better off because you were in their life. And for some people, particularly as they get older, I'm older, but I'm very active. A lot of people aren't that active. And just smiling and listening and acknowledging that you heard them is very important. You've got to make everybody feel relevant, significant, that they have purpose and that they are important to you and your organization. You've got to have humility and humanity.
One of the things that we spoke a little bit about off air, and I think this ties into preeminence, so I'd like to kind of link two concepts together, is you spoke about before we started that getting started in a practice requires a lot of effort and energy to get going. And then once you kind of get going, it can get really comfortable, and that can be a bit of a trap, and you can get stuck there. We call that being stuck in the oasis in our language.
I love that. Good visual.
Yeah. And so what ends up happening is a lot of dentists end up sitting in their one or two or three chair practice, and they're not the empire builders that you spoke about because they fall in love with the dentistry. But the people that we work with are the empire builders, and they are the ones that want to grow and scale their operations. They want to create a business that thrives without them, and they fall in love with the business of what they're doing as much as the dentistry. So I wanted to talk about preeminence in that context, because one of the things that I suppose is a bit of a myth, and I'm really interested in your thoughts about it, is how do you create preeminence without key person dependency?
It requires everybody in your organization really knowing what you stand for and their values, and they have to all have a shared belief in service to others. And they have to be there. They have to see themselves as value creators. And they have to understand something that very few people do, Jesse. There's a trite phrase, but it's quite true. Value is in the eyes of the beholder. What you think is value, you might have the greatest machine that can make a, a, a crown right there in the, you know, in the office, and that's cooler than stuff to you. But if it doesn't really, if I don't appreciate the benefit because I don't value it, then you don't get any credit for it. You've got to make sure that my values are what you are serving, because, or you have to get different patients, because a lot of times they're out of alignment. That's a double entendre in dentistry, probably, because with orthodontics. But yeah, you've got to do that. And you've got to have people see that they're, you know, anybody who sees their role in an organization as a job is, right from the get-go, you're starting out at a disadvantage. If you see it that I come at 8 or 9 and I leave at 5, and this is my job, instead of saying this is my purpose, this is my inspiration, this is my way of being the ultimate contributor, that I make people better because I smile, or I talk to them a little bit when they're sitting in the office, or when I'm cleaning their teeth, I make them feel important, or whatever they're doing. And you've got to inculcate and instill and install this incredible, incredible culture. And if you can't, then you will never be able to build up an empire or multiple practices, because you'll have to constantly micromanage, and you'll never be able. You also have to empower people, and you have to be one of the things a lot of people, I don't know about dentistry, it's certainly dentistry in Australia, but many small, medium entrepreneurs that don't have large businesses or large teams don't understand that you can't squeeze everything out of somebody. You have to help grow and develop everything with them. When you grow people, even people that don't even feel like they're aspirational, it usually, if they're quality people, it will liberate their passion, purpose, and desire to really contribute. Also, and this is something that's very hard in dentistry here, it may not be there, but they tend to hire the cheapest. They demand a lot, but they don't try to grow them, and they don't try to show their interrelationship with the whole practice. But the key is you hire the best, and you cry only once when you have to agree to pay them, because, you know, superstars are worth many times more than I'd call them broken stars. And a lot of people in dentistry here, they hire, you know, the basic person they can get. They make that person be not just a cleric or a phone answer, but they want them to be a case closer, a salesperson, and they don't teach them any of those. They don't necessarily even have the attributes. We have seen, it's just horrible. We've seen a dentist here, they'll advertise, and I don't know if you can advertise there, they'll advertise, they'll get calls, but the same person who's taking the call is supposed to basically sell them on making the appointment and coming in for the first consultation is processing the credit card. And they're also trying to work out the paperwork for the next one. And it's, I mean, many dentists here, I can't speak to your world.
No, that rings true, Jay. That rings true.
They're not good entrepreneurs. They don't realize that the leverage they have in being leaders and really creating a real high-performing enterprise.
Let's talk about that for a second, because that's really the crux of what we help people do, high-performing enterprises. And I suppose you've spoken about a couple of the mistakes when it comes to underinvesting in team and not training appropriately and all the things, or expecting one person to be a unicorn and to be fantastic at everything. And we know unicorns don't exist. And one of the philosophies that we have here at Savvy Dentists is this not invented here concept. And I always have believed that the best lessons for dentistry come from outside of dentistry. But I'm curious, in your experience, as people look to build these enterprises, what are the other mistakes that you see that trip them up? Why is it that so few businesses make the leap to enterprise, and why so many of them kind of stay stuck?
There's an enormous number of people that want to do it. They want to do everything themselves, whether they recognize it or not. They're control freaks. They don't try to grow and expand their understanding of much of anything. The most important thing you can do is grow your understanding of all the factors and forces that positively or negatively can affect, you know, your enterprise. And that means you have to understand the psychology of the market. You have to understand competitive advantages and motivators. You've got to understand that to be strategic, you need to have an integrated perpetual game plan. It starts by, I guess I would call it, appealing to them and appealing. If you can't, do they not advertise or they can advertise there?
They can, but oftentimes they don't, or they don't advertise well.
Okay. So if you have to start, if you say, okay, the majority of our patients or clients, whatever you referred to, come from word of mouth or referrals. Let's assume that to be the norm there. Is that possible?
Yeah, it's possible.
Okay. So the first thing is understanding how you get and keep people referring. People referring, first of all, by having an outsized, you know, over-delivering, but outsized performance that exceeds their expectation in every way. Secondly, you help them refer by helping them see who in their life might be someone who would want it. You give them scenarios that you are talking about. One of the things that we did, I mean, in my body of work, we found 125 different strategies for generating referrals, 125. We found that most people in any kind of business or professional practice, Jesse, they can get 10% to 100% of their clientele from word of mouth referrals, and almost none of them have even one formalized, systematized referral generating strategy in play and in place that everybody adheres to. They just get their referrals, some erratic, episodic. But if you had three or four, you would probably redouble again your referral clientele. And a referral patient, client, whatever you call them, they're going to commit sooner.
Yeah.
They're going to trust more. They're not going to negotiate with you. They always buy more combinations, buy more things, stay longer, are much more enjoyable to deal with, refer more people, and cost you nothing. I've been very blessed to understand the enterprise from every leverage point, everything possibly relevant to success and to exponential growth. The first thing is, if you don't really have a growth plan, then you're lucky if you do grow. But if you do grow by luck, it's shameful, because if you had strategic levers working for you, it would be many times that. Secondly, you've got to know who you want to appeal to. Mm. If you can't advertise, then what other qualitative mechanisms can you utilize, harness, and harvest to build your practice? Is there a certain type of a client you want? If that's the case, where are they at? How do you find them? How do you initiate a connection? What do you do when you first connect? A connection could be a phone call, could be visiting a website. Is your website, is it take people on what we call a greased chute? A greased chute is like a slide, except for it's a industrial. If it's not greased and it has spikes in it that stop them, are you losing people because your website doesn't really take them on this journey? Everyone thinks about user experience, but probably a different way to think about it, it's a journey.
Mm.
And if the journey has potholes, or if the journey has detours, or if the journey has rough terrain, they don't have to take that journey. They have a lot of choices. How do you elevate yourself in the eyes of the market you want? And how do you make that market want you? If the consumer sees a dentist somewhat generically, and I'm not saying it's true, but I think to some degree, there's good dentists and there's bad dentists. But I don't think superior above that is normally the default that they think about. So if you want to be seen way up here, how are you going to do it? And if you do it, how are you going to get the people that realize it, if it's only internally, to take the word outside? How are you going to take the word outside? How are you going to create the ultimate practice growth machine that conforms to, you know, your ideology, your belief system, your integrity, all those things. And most people don't even think about that. They just, you know, work their hearts out and they grow through grit and organic momentum, which is admirable, but it's very, very inefficient and it's very suboptimal.
Jay, there's a ton of stuff there. And ladies and gents, if you've just tuned in, go back and listen to the last 10 minutes because I think there's just been a whole masterclass on how to grow your practice in not one easy step, because it's not one easy step, but there's a whole framework and methodology that Jay has just laid out there for you that I'd encourage you just to tune in and listen to a dozen times over. Jay, I just want to shift gears for a second and talk about the business owner themselves. Apart from being well-known in your own right for your work, which, as I said, if anyone's been around marketing for more than a nanosecond, they've come across your work. And like I said, a lot of the people in today's world who are well-known, you know, they've had their origin traced back to you. And on top of all of your own work, you've also worked pretty closely with Tony Robbins as well in his business mastery programs and others. And I'm curious to ask you about some of the lessons that you might have learned either through your own journey or through that journey with Tony, about becoming better leaders, overcoming limitations, and how to be the person that you need to be to create the enterprise. Because again, we're talking about creating enterprises, but some of the rate limiting, you know, factors are psychological, and you've alluded to being a control freak being one of them. But what other things do the leaders of the businesses need to be thinking about? How do they need to be growing? We spoke about growing other people, but how do they need to grow?
If you think about growth, the best way to grow is to have the ability to have breakthrough thinking. And breakthrough thinking doesn't necessarily mean that you throw out everything in your practice. It means that you defy the necessity to do it the same way as everybody else. You look for enhancements, improvements, more impactfulness, first of all, let's start. You want to create an internal environment that people love coming to work.
Yes.
That feel purposeful and that they feel like at the end of a day, they have accomplished something meaningful and fulfilling. Because if you don't, then it's the beginning of the end of growth, because you've created a very strained environment where you can sense it. There's a positive or a negative electricity in the air. So the first thing is that. The second thing is you want to understand that different people are motivated for different reasons. So you want to try to understand the motivations of different people in your team. And you want to have them appreciate one another, and you want everybody to want the best for everybody. If they don't, and there's political or there's friction and resentment, or you know, everyone's got their little silos, that's not going to be growth either. For you personally, you need to study and grow. I mean, you're not omnipotent. You may be the very wonderfulest dentist in all of Queensland or Sydney or wherever in the heck you are, or maybe you have offices everywhere. But to be a great entrepreneur, if you think about entrepreneurship just for what it means, It's different than being a proprietor. A proprietor basically just sucks commercial oxygen out of the air. They don't add anything meaningful above the norm, above what a commodity would be. Oh, by the way, you don't want to be a commodity if you want to be preeminent. You want to be proprietary that nobody else can possibly match. And you've got to do it many ways. First of all, you've got to basically work on your leadership capability. You are a leader. You've got to have a hopefulness in your belief system for two different factors. One is the people who work for you, but the most important is the hopefulness that you can enrich the lives of every patient. And that hopefulness has to be expressive. It's got to exude from you and your team. You got to be a good leader. Leaders manage by inspiring. If you're not inspiring, and we watched a lot of bitter dentists that we worked with here when I was doing a lot of work with them, and they resented their people. And the people are frustrated when their team doesn't grow or do what they want, But when you get down to the core, this is a very famous person said this, W. Edwards Deming. It's rarely a people problem. It's always a system or process problem. Mm-hmm. The system to make them better, and you're critical that they're not what you want, it's not their fault. People, they don't think like you. They're not playing the same game you're playing. So you've got to help them rise to a higher level of understanding. And that requires training. But you have to train yourself. You have to train yourself to be a great communicator. You have to train yourself to have patience, not patience, P-A-T-I-E-N-T, but the one that means calm and a thoughtful ability to patiently interact with people. You have to be a great trainer. You've got to realize that nobody, you know, maybe they are trained if they're a, you know, if they're a, you know, if they're going to do cleaning and they're basically a technician, they can be trained. But most of the people have never been trained in anything. They've never been trained in listening. They've never been trained in trust building. They've never been trained in communication skills. They've never been trained in collaboration. They've never been trained if they're doing any kind of selling and selling. They've never been trained in understanding neuroscience and the way the brain works and the psychology of someone. They've never been trained in deep thinking. They've never been trained in understanding the holistic interaction of things. You as a leader need to be, first of all, a strategist. Mm-hmm. Strategist is someone dealing with the holistic everything. They're looking at the game you're playing, and the game you're playing isn't just coming into your office and putting your white jacket on and then putting your rubber gloves on and then drilling and filling. It's about it's a business, unless you're doing it just pro bono and you're wealthy and you're doing it because you're doing pro bono dentistry. If you're doing it as a business, you need to treat it as a business. And a business is an entity that has revenue generation, and that is a department. It isn't something that just happens. It's very strategically focused on, and it's a constantly applied or implemented facet. It has operations, which makes everything work. It has supply chain stuff. It has client service, customer service. And if you don't think about those as units of a combined holistic entity, so you've got to grow yourself. I'm going to give you a scary concept.
Okay.
I believe best practices, in many ways, are a fallacy. If you're the lucky first practice or first business to learn a best practice, Jesse, you have a short window of advantage. Because it's it is exposed to everybody. So sooner or later, everybody's doing it. So now it's not a best practice. It's a standard operating procedure. And there's no advantage. You got to decide if you want to be more successful. Do you want to be more successful? How much more successful? What has to happen? Years and years ago, I did seminars and I had Brian Tracy speak on a couple of topics. And he had one really great topic. He said, well, how much is your time worth today versus how much do you want it to be worth? It was very interesting. And he'd say, okay, what do you make right now? So let's say you make $200,000 a year. How many hours do you work? I don't know if a dentist works 40 or 30. Or, I don't know how many weeks, months, but you divide and you go, okay, it's worth $110 an hour.
Yep.
What do you want to make? Okay, you want to make $500,000. Okay, that's 2.5 times. You don't have 2.5 times more hours. So what are you going to do different? What are you doing you shouldn't be doing? There's so much fascinating methodological and ideological and really great tactical stuff too. But highest and best use theory is a really interesting concept, Jesse. Most people don't use their time to optimal advantage. It has many things to do. Operational efficiency and making everything work together and not wasting critical time. Investing, not spending time at the right moment. So, for example, an hour at 9 o'clock on a Monday morning is far more valuable normally than an hour at 6 o'clock on Friday.
Yes.
But most people don't really allocate and prioritize to get the highest and best use. There, it's funny. I'll tell you something really ironic. When we used to do our masterminds, and at the end of every one, I would pose to the 50 or 100 dentists that were in the room a question, and the question would change. But usually it was, what one thing could you do when you go back that's going to make your performance, your practice, your profit greater? And I'll never forget, one said, well, I know if I had an assistant doing a lot of the things I do myself, I would be more successful. Then he said, but I don't know how to hire one. And I said, I'm going to change your life right now. I said, I wonder how many of you have this magical device that's called a cell phone or an iPad or a laptop. And if you do, I'm going to show you the most wonderful hidden secret of them all. It's called YouTube. And if you go on YouTube with this magical instrument and you plug in how to hire an assistant, I'll bet you could get a few instructions, and it's hundreds. So then he goes, yeah, but I wouldn't know how to train him or her. And I'm going, you got to be kidding. But you have to want to do what it takes to grow. And the problem, as I said, when you're starting out, you're having to work so hard. But once you get to critical mass and once you get enough momentum, you can make a reasonably very, very comfortable living if you don't do anything else. And if you don't screw it up, you're going to lose some, get some. Hopefully you have a net positive on referrals. But that's so far removed from what's really possible if you decide you are going to be the ultimate entrepreneur professional and you're going to be an exponential entrepreneur. You're not going to go for incremental growth. You're going to figure out all kinds of ways. You're going to figure what kind of cases you want. Where are you going to get them? What kind of patients you want? Where are they more likely to be? What can you do? What can you personify? What can you offer? What other benefits? What other advantages? What other experiential can you do that others don't? So that the word of mouth, if that's how you're going to grow it, is your website engage people? Does it personify that you are superior? When you go there, is there no contest? There's you and there's everybody else? Or are you just one of a kind? Are you growing every day in every way? I mean, are you ever questioning? The idea of R&D is really interesting. R&D is historically, you know, it connotes, the pharmaceutical and technology. But R&D means researching and developing any of a number of things. How you communicate with your patients, how you market, if you market, how you train people, how you deal with your community. And if you're not constantly questioning and trying to innovate on yourself, there's a great quote, same guy, this is Peter Drucker. He said, if you're not constantly committed to making your current business model and approach obsolete, you can rest assured your competitors are committed to do it for you and to you. So you can be, I mean, it's very appropriate maybe in Australia, you can be an ostrich. And that's fine, but the world doesn't care. You've got to decide, do you want to be just average, which to me is very unfulfilling, or do you want to be preeminent? Do you want to be seen as the most trusted and the very best, and arguably, if you're in geographic proximity, the only one I want to go to because? And if you don't have a good because, well, there's a wonder drug phrase in marketing, and it's reason why. If you can't help me know the reason why I should choose you over everyone else, the reason why I should constantly come back at the intervals I should, the reason why I should refer, the reason why I should enjoy and appreciate you as my protector. And because the purpose of an advisor is people are under the care, the protection, and the well-being of you. And if you don't really have, if you can't articulate, not even to your patients, to your team, what you stand for.
Most people can't articulate it to themselves, Jay, to be honest with you, let alone their team.
Yeah. And they also don't know where they want to go. And you have to reverse engineer everything. Just like if you were going to do a case, I'm assuming that a committed professional reverse engineers what they're going to do. They have the mold, or they, you know, if they're going to put an implant, or they're going to put a crown, or they're going to do veneers, or they're going to, whatever they're going to do, they reverse engineer it. Well, that's the very same process, Jesse, you've got to do for growth and for success. And the question is, are you accepting a fraction of the success that you could have? And why do you want more success? If you don't want it economically, you should want it because if you believe that you and your team in your practice care more, provide more, contribute more, have better outcomes, you don't want them going to an inferior provider, not because they're nasty or they're dicks, excuse my language, but because the patient will be disserved. You want to grow, if nothing else, so you could contribute your greatness to more people that aren't getting it from your colleagues.
Once you've become established, once you've become the standard in the industry, or the gold standard, or the, like you said, best practice becomes standard operating procedure after a while. Once you've set that pace, and you now have people trying to knock you off your perch and people trying to disrupt you and trying to do all those things.
I'm going to be on a time critical, unfortunately, enjoying this. And I don't know if my answers are sufficient for what you want to get out of me. I hope that they have some value. But if you think about where breakthroughs come from, they rarely come from within. So fiber optics transformed telecommunication, but it didn't come from telecommunication. It came from aerospace and was borrowed. FedEx, Federal Express, created a whole industry of overnight or early morning delivery of packages by borrowing what's called the hub and spoke check clearing method that the Federal Reserve Bank uses to process checks right away so people don't bounce checks. Viagra came from heart medicine. Rogaine came from pimple medicine. The ballpoint pen or roll-on deodorant, I can't remember which one borrowed from that. The number one baby buggy manufacturer in the world, they do $400 or $500 million. They borrowed the collapsible wheels from airplanes. And the point I'm making is, breakthrough thinking, superior performance thinking, non-traditional thinking doesn't come from inside. It comes from outside your industry. There's a great book that, and I'll tell you two books that I read that were really interesting. One was called Range, and it said that the people that are going to own success in this century are going to be the ones that have the most range, that understand the most amount of interrelated things, because just one specialty isn't enough. There was a book that was written 30, 40 years ago about a technique for creating ideas, breakthrough ideas. And the man that wrote it was a famous ideologist. He came up with better ideas for, and it's a longer story, but he said the way you get breakthrough ideas, first of all, your mind is designed to solve problems and make opportunities possible, but it can't do it if it doesn't know its job. So it has to know what you're trying to do. The second is you study everything you can about that subject. But the next part is the critical one. Then you study everything you can about everything you can outside that subject. And then you let your mind put together the combinations. So there are so many skill sets that you don't even think about mastering that will give you advantage. And you can improve, you know, I'm known for the three ways to go a business model, and it's really working on the geometry of the business. Think about this, 10 plus 10 plus 10 is 30, 10 times 10 times 10 is 1,000. If you identify 15, 20 factors in your practice that you can increase a mere 10% each, it's not 10%, it's 10 times 10, and it ends up being hundreds of percentage improvement. And that brings more to the bottom line, brings more patients, brings more outcomes, better people that stay to, you know, to fulfill their treatment plan, better people that accept their treatment plan. If you understand consultative selling, that alone can transform the results of whoever you've assigned to close the deals. And if it's all you and you're pretty darn good at it, it's interesting. I'm having an ADD moment. I have a doctor who's a colleague of mine, and he did an analysis of the the proposed treatment plans that weren't accepted for the last year. It was over, in one practice, was over $1 million.
Oh, gosh.
He's an empire builder, and he said he wasn't really on anybody, and they don't even really try hard. And they've got, you know, tacit people who are also the receptionist, and they're that are assigned doing it, and they don't even make, they don't follow up on it. And the point is, if you're unlucky enough to have grown your practice to a comfortable lifestyle, the price you are paying is limiting your growth, limiting your success, limiting your prosperity, limiting the amount of people, your practices, your team could be impacting and enriching and improving. And that to me is a tragedy.
Jay, it is a tragedy. The other tragedy is we're going to be running out of time. From all of us here, I'd like to say thank you for your generosity, Jay. I know we've run a little bit over, and thank you for your good grace around that. But more importantly, thank you for the work you do.
Thank you.
It is wonderful, and it's been a major impact on my life.
When I'm able to have an impact on an entrepreneur or a professional, it's very fulfilling because I see the impact. I see the change in the contribution that they make to their market, to their clientele, to their team. And it's quite profound, but it's also liberating. It's intoxicating when you operate at this rarefied strata of understanding and integrated strategic momentum. You're unstoppable in many ways, but what I know to be true about a lot of people in your profession is they're not always happy. They're not always fulfilled. Some of them, frankly, are depressed. They are frustrated. They don't know why they're frustrated. They're frustrated with their team. They're frustrated every day. They get tired of drilling and filling. But if you try to adopt a few of the, it changes everything. It gives every day more purpose and possibility. It gives you more passion. It gives you more connectivity. And that, you exude that to your team, and they exude that to your patient base. And that has a dynamic that is, it's incalculably and unimaginably powerful.
Indeed it is. Indeed it is. Jay, thank you so much for being our guest for episode 500.
Congratulations again. What a wonderful achievement. And I hope, even though I may not be on point on everything, that this has some deep, provocative impact, and it causes people to challenge their current professional worldview.
It absolutely does, Jay. I can guarantee it. Really thought-provoking. Lots of things that I'm making mental notes about to go back and review in my own world as well. So once again, Jay, appreciate your time. You've been a good man.
Thank you so much, and congratulations.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast. For more episodes, go to drjessegreen.com/savvydentist. And to discover how to build a high-performance dental practice, visit drjessegreen.com and download the free report.